Fearscape Media Network. Exploring the unknown. One podcast at a time.
Fearscape Media Network is your new home for everything weird and enlightening. Check out podcasts and YouTube shows covering content from discussions on horror films to the paranormal to meditation. Find out more at fearscapemedia.com. Ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of The Convergence Enigma with Josh and Stefan. I am your host, Stefan Gearhart, and I am joined, as always, by the man who is out of this world and never out of my mind, Mr. Josh Rutledge. How are you, sir?
I am doing fantastic, and I appreciate that. I appreciate that I'm always on your mind, you know. It's like
You're
that old...
always on my mind.
It reminds me of that old pickup line that was never really, you know, good, but, you know, our... Hey, are you tired? Because you've been running through my mind all day, you know?
That's the reason nobody uses those anymore. Nobody
uses those anymore. I feel like that's a podcast waiting to happen.
Failed pickup lines. Oh, boy. Anyways, you guys, thank you. We are on the fourth and final episode of Alien Abduction April. Ooh, ooh. I make my own sound effects, Josh.
we got to be careful. We cannot call it AAA because we'll get in trouble.
Yeah, we can't call it AAA. But yeah, we are on our fourth and final episode. As promised, we are covering the Pascagoula abduction, one of the most famous abductions, I think, in the history of the abduction movement. I'm gonna call it a movement of the 20th century. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that most people involved in movements want to be there, whereas these people probably not. So
I had a movement this morning that I was there for. It was great. But yeah, this one took place in 1973 in Pascagoula, Mississippi, by two boys. I'm going to call them boys, even though one was 42 years old, Charles Hickson, yeah. And a 19-year-old Calvin Parker. It's going to be really interesting. We'll dig into that as we usually do, y'all. But again, thank you guys for tuning in, as you usually do right here. But Josh, let's go ahead and get crack-a-lackin' and get into our segments this week. And as always, our first one is the psychic word of the week.
And now, the psychic word of the week.
All right, Josh, psychic word of the week, as usual, comes from the Encyclopedic Psychic Dictionary from June G. Bletzer, PhD. Rest in peace, honey bear. So, Josh, I flipped through the pages, and you won't believe this. I landed on page 547. This is something that we should have magically flipped to every time Alan Greenfield has ever been on our show. Yeah, I landed and looked down. The term is secret chiefs.
Secret chiefs.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Fantastic. So now we get an official description of what Secret Chiefs is from Miss June G. Bletzer. So looks like we've got two episodes here, two definitions here. The first one says magnanimous, intelligent soul minds who have earned the privilege to belong to the order of the Great White Brotherhood, make themselves known by entering mediumship development circles to each psychic skills, laws of the universe, and to encourage advancement of the soul mind. Their knowledge cannot be learned by formal education. only enter circles in which the members show an earnest, consistent desire for the truths of the higher realms. And let me just preface by saying the Great White Brotherhood is not the KKK.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say the same thing. So
right. And when it talks about white here, it's preferably talking about white magic. So they're just talking about the positive, essentially good magic that is not darker magic. So that is what the Great White Brotherhood is there. And oh boy, it's time to update that, y'all. Secret Chiefs. They put into reference Golden Dawn as an example. Number two comes from the Hebrew Kabbalah. This says the supposed invisible superhumans who direct the activities of authentic, dedicated fraternities. Mm. I like this. And in parentheses, it also says the Shining Ones.
Interesting. Yep. Which, you know, the Shining Ones is a callback to when we talked to Ryan Musgrave Evans. You know, he described his interactions with the crypto terrestrials as being sparkly or shiny, right?
Oh, so, luminescence. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and yeah.
I've been shiny before, too. Enough baby oil will do that.
What is it? There's a crab or something in Moana that's shiny. So,
I love Moana. Not a sponsor, but I love Moana. All right, Josh, let's go ahead and get to our man. I mean, because we could do a whole episode on Secret Chiefs, man.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
In fact, I think we may with Alan.
We may do that. Yeah. Coming soon,
oddly enough. But anyways, let's go to our final segment, which is Bigfoot sighting of the week. It is time for our Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Yeti, Skunk Ape, furry, tall creatures of the week. Of the week, Josh. So where are we getting this from? When and what's happening?
So, you know, kind of along the lines of the rebrand and kind of where we've been going over the last, you know, year and a half, 2 years, with the idea that a lot of these things tend to happen, you know, kind of converge, right? So I went out and looked at BFRO.net, and I came across an entry that did happen, in fact, in 1973. It's classified as winter of 1973 in Mississippi, just about 100 miles north of where the Pascagoula
Thunderbird flies.
So, again, you know, the fact
that, boy, it makes you wonder if there were some hauntings that happened in Mississippi around that time, too, or
some poltergeist stuff or something. So it goes. So this person filled it out when they were much older in life, but this is their account.
Unfortunately, I have no video or audio, only personal observation. The first encounter did not involve a sighting. As a young boy, I was out on the front porch with my mother, father, uncle, and grandfather. At around 9 p.m., we all heard a sound that was not unlike a shrill human scream. Until that night, I did not know what it meant to have your hair stand on end. A somewhat large dog that we had outside barked, cried, and ran away in apparent terror. The only thing we found the next day was a single, partial footprint. The next encounter happened when my cousin and I were in the woods fishing at a pond on our grandfather's property. We first noted a very strong odor that we took to be a skunk. We then heard a sound like a scream, a few grunts, then nothing. Before the next encounter, there were some unusual incidents that deserve mentioning. First was the finding of a dead livestock, mainly pigs. They almost always had been found with their liver and heart removed. I never saw this myself, only heard the stories. I did see on the last two occasions all of the fruit eaten off the trees on the property. In both cases, all the fruit was removed from the trees and the pits on the ground around the tree. We laughed about the belly ache something would have had eating an entire tree of green pears. Later, as a teenager, I was alone in the woods I had the distinct feeling I was being watched. I crossed a barbed wire fence near the road, crossed the road, and entered the woods there. When I returned to the road a short time later, 20 to 30 minutes or so, I saw that the fence I had earlier crossed had been partially knocked down. Upon approaching the damaged fence, I noticed several large footprints. They appeared human in every respect except for their size. Even then, I wore a size 12D boot. The prints were at least 2 to 3 inches longer and made it 2 inches wider than my boot. The tracks led first to the road, then back into the woods. Maybe a year later, a friend and I were in the woods. He was from New Orleans, Louisiana, and knew nothing of the past encounters. While near a creek bottom, he suddenly froze and asked me what was watching us. I stood near him and saw what I first thought was a bear about 25 yards away. It was in a squatting position. It then stood upright. It was, I'm sure, 7 to 8 feet tall. The creature was covered with very dark brown hair over its entire body, with the exception of its face. It stood upright like a man, not stooped like a bear. As we departed the area, we watched it follow us. The creature had a long stride and its arms swung as it walked. It followed us to the edge of the wood line. The only sounds it made were whistling noises. My next and last encounter did not occur until I was in the Army. A coworker and I went to the old house to do some shooting. We arrived late that night. As we sat outside talking, we saw a large man-shaped creature walk across the road about 125 yards away. It walked into the woods and disappeared. It did not seem to notice us. Last encounter did not occur until
I was in the Army. Dude, that got intense, man.
Yeah. I mean that's like a lifetime of encounters right there. And this is classified as a Class A according to BFRO, which is, you know, direct, you know, sighting. It's not, you know, just noises or whatever. So yeah, a lot of activity there in that part of Mississippi. And again, as we'll see in just a few minutes, some abduction activity as well. So
man, like that, you know, reminded, and I know I say this like every time we cover a Bigfoot sighting, but it reminded me of that Eastern Kentucky Sasquatch story that we had sent in, you know, the fence line and just everything. Yep. And I wear a size 12, by the way. That's the size of my shoe, and I already don't feel like it's that big. But then I forget, you know, that it is. Yeah. But for him to say 2-3 inches larger and wider, like 2 inches wider, that's a huge foot.
Yeah, I mean, that's like Shaq size feet right there.
So. If not even bigger, man.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that would definitely freak me out. I would be super scared too. And to continue to have encounters, that's so, the scary part.
You know, I mentioned that. So the first encounter that was discussed where he was on the porch and heard the noise, that was at 9 p.m. in the fall of 1973. And what we're getting ready to talk about, the Pascagoula abduction happened in October 1973.
It's crazy how this all comes together, Josh. I mean, that's the whole point of this, is how this all comes together. So let's go ahead and get to our topic this week in the Convergence Enigma and talk about the Pascagoula abduction, and let's see how this converges. All right, Josh. Pascagoula, man. We've been hanging on to this one for quite a while. Saving this for Alien Abduction April. And here we are. So, this is one of my favorites.
So for those who don't know, just a little bit of geography reference. Pascagoula, Mississippi is right on the water there of the Gulf of Mexico. And so the thing we just spoke about before, about the Bigfoot sighting, that was about 100 miles kind of north of that area. But there's waterways that interweave all throughout Mississippi. You know, it's a very marshy kind of area. Anyways, this happens right down on the Gulf. So just a few nights before.
I'm pumped, Josh.
I am. So the day before the actual abduction sighting happened, on October 10th, 1973, 15 different people, including two policemen, reported seeing a large silver UFO slowly fly over a housing project in St. Tammany Parish, New Orleans, Louisiana. So then 24 hours later, we've got Charles Hickson and Calvin Parker.
So we've got multiple sites. So it's not just these two guys. They're just famous for the abduction part. In terms of the UFO sighting, there was more. Interesting. Yeah.
And I'm actually, once we get through the abduction piece, I've got some later discovered supporting evidence for a sighting that happened in Pascagoula. So I'll get to that in just a minute.
Cool.
So at Charles Hickson, Calvin Parker. Charles Hickson's 42 years old at the time.
That's
Calvin
my Parker. Age.
Yeah. Calvin Parker was 19. That was your age several years ago.
How weird is that I was 19 several years ago and this guy was 19 and the other guy is 42, which I am now.
Epic. Right. So, you know, right. it's like we're right there with him.
We are in Pascagoula.
So the two men were both from the town of Gautier, Mississippi. They were doing some night fishing in the Pascagoula River around 9 p.m. Interesting here, 9 p.m. Also, the Bigfoot sighting occurred at 9 p.m. Mm-hmm. So just throwing this out there. They suddenly heard a type of buzzing behind them. Both men turned around to see the source of the sound and were amazed to see a glowing egg-shaped object with bluish lighting on its front side.
Egg-shaped. So we have seen some egg-shaped ones in the past before. There's even that famous one in New Jersey or Pennsylvania? I can't think of the name of it.
What makes me think when I hear the egg shape is the Allagash abduction that we covered.
I was going to bring up Allagash. I was going to say I for a long time got these two mixed up.
Yeah. So, you know, of course, the Allagash abduction, for those who don't know, we did an episode on it a couple of years ago. It took place in upstate New York, like in the Catskills, but it also involved an egg-shaped object with glowing lights. Oddly enough, it involved three men who were abducted. But so the unusual craft was hovering just a few feet above the ground, maybe about 30 feet from the shore of the river. Then, amazingly, a door opened in the object, and three strange beings began to float just above the water straight toward them. The beings had legs, but they did not use them. They simply floated across the river. Parker and Hickson would later describe the beings as about 5 feet tall, had bullet-shaped heads without necks. That reminds me of Mothman. Slits for mouths.
Nope.
And where their noses or ears would be, they had thin conical objects sticking out like carrots from a snowman's head.
Almost like a light Darrow.
They had no eyes, gray, wrinkled skin, round feet, and claw-like hands.
Yeah, I heard crab-style pincers.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
is creepy, dude. This might be the creepiest description of aliens yet.
The drawings that I've seen, though, you know what it kind of reminds me of? And this harkens back to a theory that I've had. It kind of reminds me a little bit of one of, like, the 1950s depiction of a robot.
It reminds me of, and I know this is why they get a lot of flack, I'm looking over here at the humanoid descriptions as well. It kind of reminds me of the day the Earth stood still.
That's where I was going.
And everybody and their mother that's a skeptic says that every dang alien abduction case UFO is all stemmed because of that movie. Yeah.
So, but one of the things that I've proposed as a theory a couple times when we talked about it with the Ingrid Cole case, is that do these things take on a visage that looks like what we equate to pop culture in an event to somehow ease us or change the way we react to them. So
I don't know, but all I know is looking at these, man, I need Joe Perdue with Wild and Weird West Virginia, Wild and Weird Radio, to make some of these Pascagoula aliens, because he makes toys of cryptids and stuff. Yeah. Joe, if you're listening, please make me a Pascagoula alien. Thank you. Goodbye.
So Hickson, just frozen in fear and disbelief, was grabbed by two of these creatures. The third one took Parker, who had fainted from fright. Hickson would later relate that when the beings put their arms under his body to support him, he felt numb all over.
Makes you wonder if they have like micro tendrils, you know, like that can secrete something, or if it's all just telepathic.
Or it could also, I mean, I've been really looking into a lot lately around sound and the abilities that sound has that we don't really, you know, we think about sound and the sounds that we hear from our car, radio, so on and so forth, and listening to this podcast. But sound actually has a lot of other uses in the form of like energy creation and energy movement. You know, the government a couple of years ago were looking at large, you know, sound weapons that, you know, could fire a large burst of sound and deafen a battlefield, so on and so forth.
Yeah,
so,
and there are military trials where they were trying to use sound as a way to knock people out as well.
Yep.
So
who knows if, you know, if there's some sort of a sound component here that allowed them to kind of lift him up. So he was then floated into a brightly lit room inside of the UFO. Inside this room, he floated along with an eye-like device that examined him all over. After that device got done examining him, he was just kind of left there floating. The beings left the room. It's kind of thought here that maybe they left the room to examine Parker, right? The other guy. Approximately 20 minutes after the ordeal had begun, it was over. Hickson was floated back outside of the strange craft. Parker was crying and praying on the ground.
As you would do in this situation, John.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be a Christian real quick again.
Only a moment or two later, the craft rose straight up into the air and disappeared.
Bye.
And
they were awake pretty much through this whole ordeal.
Well, no. Hickson was awake. Calvin fainted.
That's right. Calvin did faint.
Yep. They kind of pulled themselves together a little bit. Wasn't really sure what they should do. They were reluctant to report what had happened, but they really felt obligated to tell someone. So despite the fear of being ridiculed, they telephoned to their local sheriff's office. And I think this is really interesting. You'll remember that Project Blue Book was closed in 1969.
Yeah.
And the kind of the statement from there forward was anybody who contacts the military, refer them to their local law enforcement. But this hit the news, and it hit like nationwide news.
Yeah.
To the point where Hynek was interested and did actually come and investigate the case. Even though Project Blue Book was closed,
Hynek was in deep into ufology at that point. You know, everything we know about Hynek was that Blue Book proved to him that this is legit.
So when they went to the sheriff's department to report their case, they were worried about going to law enforcement. So they instead drove to their local newspaper, but found that there were no reporters present. There was just someone that was kind of cleaning up the office after it was closed. And so finally decided to go and talk to the sheriff's department. So when they did that, luckily, this is one of the, you know, this is kind of reported as one of the only alien abduction cases that was actually recorded At the time, you know, or just a few hours after it had happened.
So an interview, you mean?
An interview, yes. Yeah. But I mean, it was an interview of the abduction, right? It was a sheriff talking to the individual.
Yeah. So we've got the interview.
Yep. Even though I'll be the laughingstock of the country, I'll tell you what I've seen and the experience I've had.
Now, what did you say your name was?
Charles Hickson. That's H-I-C-K-S-O-N. Even though they laughed me out of Jackson County, I'll do what I know is right. That's all I can do, and I don't expect anybody to believe it. It's just unbelievable.
Okay, we just have to know what happened. What happened to y'all from the very beginning?
Well, this'll be the third time.
We just want to make sure to hear your story. That's what convinced us.
Okay. Calvin and me, this boy, he works with me. We went down below the grain elevator along the river. We caught a few headheads and down there and a couple croakers, not much. So I said to Calvin, son, let's go up by the old Shopter shipyard. I've caught redfish in there and speckled trout.
Now, is he your son?
No. He's just a friend. He's from Jones County. That's where I'm reared from. And I've got a farm and a home up there. Well, so we went over there to try a little while. We sat there fishing. I don't know how. I guess we must have been there sometime. And all of a sudden, it's a blue light. It circled a bit.
Now, how high was it?
You couldn't hardly tell. It wasn't too close, but maybe, I don't know, 2-3 miles away. It was pretty close. And a blue light. You're surprised when you look up in the sky and you see a blue light. It really calls your attention to it. Then it just, a little while, it come right down above the bayou. You know, about 2 to 3 feet above the ground.
And how close was it?
Maybe 25, 30 yards, but it might have been 35, 40 yards. You see something like that, it'd scare you to death, and I couldn't believe it. I started to head for the river.
Now, was there a noise to it?
A little buzzing sound, like zzz, zzz, like that. That's all. Wasn't any back blast or anything. And you think you're dreaming about something like that, you know? And I started to hit the river, man, and Calvin, he just went hysterical.
Now, hold on. What's Calvin's last name?
It's Parker. Calvin Parker, Jr. He got his father's name. So we was right on the river. It didn't hit the ground. It hovered. And all of a sudden, right in the end of it, this opening was laid up there. And three of them just floated out of the thing. They wasn't on no ground.
They didn't have no feet.
None of they didn't have toes. But they had a feet shape. It was more or less like a round-like thing on a leg, if you'd call it a leg. I was scared to death. And me, with the spinning reel out here, that's all I had. I was so scared. Well, you can't imagine. Calvin Dunn went hysterical on me.
Then what happened? They walk up onto you?
They just glided up there to me. Then one of them made a little buzzing noise. And two of them made no noise.
Wait, what kind of noise?
Just
zzz, zzz, zzz. Sound like a machine?
Yeah, like that. Like it may have been contacting the others. See, I don't know. But then I was so damn scared, I didn't know anything. And two of them just floated around behind me and lifted me up off the ground.
By your arms?
By my arms, with their pincher things. They must have done something, just raised up off the ground.
They didn't use no force, though.
No force. They didn't hurt me. I didn't feel nothing.
Well, how was your buddy doing then?
He just passed out on me, and they glided me into that thing. You know how you just glide somebody? All of us moving like we're floating through the air. Mm. When I got in there, they had me. You know, they just kind of had me there. There were no seats, no chain. They just moved me around. I couldn't resist them. I just floated, felt like no sensation, no pain. They kept me in that position a little while. Then they'd raise me back up.
Now, you said that they had some kind of instrument on you, didn't you?
Some kind of instrument. I don't know what it was. I didn't see anything that I could call an instrument that I've ever seen before.
Well, what did it look like? Could you describe it for me?
I just couldn't describe it.
Was it like an X-ray machine?
No, it wasn't like no X-ray machine. There ain't no way to describe it. It looked like an eye, like a big eye. It had some kind of an attachment to it. It moved. It looked like a big eye. And it went all over my body, up and down, and then they left me.
They left you inside the machine.
Left me right by myself. And the position they had me in, I couldn't move. Just my eyes could move. And I don't know how long they left me. I don't even know if I stayed conscious, but I think I did. And then they came back.
Now, how long did they leave you?
I don't know. I never wear no watch.
How long would you say?
I'd say 20 to 30 minutes. Then when they came back, they laid me back over again.
Now, you didn't try to talk to them, ask them what was going on.
Yes, I did. But I'd get a buzzing sound out of them. That's all. They didn't pay me no attention, my talking or anything.
Now, how many eyes did they have?
There could have been eyes, but I didn't see any. But there was something that came straight out, more or less where a nose would be on a human being's face.
They have any hair?
I don't know. I just swear I don't know. That's blank in my mind.
So you looked at them, didn't you? Did they breathe?
I swear I don't know.
Well, how tall were they?
They were about 5 feet tall.
They didn't have no kind of clothes on or nothing?
Not so I noticed.
And you can't tell me what color they was?
Man, you scared as I was.
Was they white looking, pale, blue, green? What was they?
Best I remember, they looked pale like to me.
Wrinkled skin?
It might have been. It looked kind of like skin fit. They might have had something on. They might not have. I don't know.
You say below the nose there was an opening.
Like a slit. And I never saw that opening move. And they had something on each side of the head that resembled ears, but didn't look like ears that we know. And the head, I didn't see any neck. It looked like it just sit there on the body.
Now, was this right after dark?
It wasn't too long after dark.
Well, why you waiting till this time of night to call us?
Well, Mr. Fred, when I got out of there, I know nobody would believe me. I went by the Mississippi Press, beat on the door. This guy was sitting at the desk. I said I wanted to see a reporter. He said there won't be no reporter here till morning. I thought about it again. If I call the sheriff's department, they won't believe me. If I call the police department, they won't believe me.
Well, how do you know unless you tried?
Well, I apologize for that. That's just my thinking.
How much did you have to drink, son?
I hadn't drank anything. But in the 45 minutes to an hour before I called you all, I did drink. I had to settle my nerves. I just about went crazy. And I got to get back and let my wife know. She's probably hysterical now.
Your wife's all right. Listen, you remember leaving?
Leaving where?
The ship, when they put you out.
The only thing I remember is that kid Calvin, just standing there. I've never seen that sort of fear in a man's face as I saw on Calvin's. It took me a while to get him back to his senses. And the first thing I told him was, son, ain't nobody gonna believe this. Let's just keep this whole thing to ourselves. Well, the more I thought about it, the more I thought I had to let some officials know.
What did they do after they let you go?
There was a buzzing sound, and it was gone.
Can you describe the vehicle?
Yes, I can. It was about 8 feet tall. It wasn't round. It was oblong, sort of oblong, and the opening in it had one. It just wanted the end of it. The only lights I seen on the outside was that blue light.
Inside, what lights did they have?
I didn't see no bulbs or anything. It just glowed light, but it was real bright. I tried calling the Kessler Air Force Base, and they just told me to call the sheriff. So, yeah.
Now we had mentioned there is the actual recording. It's just a not a good recording, but you can find that recording and listen to that.
Yeah,
just it's hear the fear in his voice, man.
Yeah, it is, and it's, but it, yeah, it, the recording is really hard to hear. It just, you know, it's it's a department, you know, it's not like they show up and you know, think that they're going to record an alien abduction and they need to get it on tape. So, so like I said, it did go around to the press. And ARPO, we've talked about them mm-hmm. and other things, you know, the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization, sent the University of California professor James Harder to investigate along with Dr. J. Allen Hynek. So Harder and Hynek interviewed Hickson and Parker together. Harder hypnotized Hickson, but he became so frightened that the session had to be aborted. The two abductees were encouraged to take a lie detector test, and they both passed it. Both Harder and Hynek, highly respected in their profession, believed the two men's story. At a later date, Hynek actually stated there was definitely something here that was not terrestrial.
That's intense, man.
It's interesting here that it's record. It says in a later incident, a couple weeks after this account, some Coast Guardsmen and fishermen had an encounter with an underwater metallic object. The strange object had an amber light on it, and the guard chased it in the Pascagoula River. The object was close enough to touch, but each time it was prodded with a large boat hook, it turned off its lights, moved away, and then turned the lights back on. That encounter lasted about 40 minutes before the craft disappeared.
Wow.
So
that's insane, man.
I mean, there was something definitely going on. You got the Bigfoot sighting around that same time. You know, the abduction encounter, the Coast Guard encounter. And then, you know, I mentioned early on that there was another sighting or account that came out a few years later. And so I'm going to read you a little bit about that. And so this is from an interview with Mike Cataldo, who was a Navy chief petty officer in 1973. And he and two of his friends were headed back from the Gulf, kind of headed home. They were just driving along in the individual's car and had a sighting. So it says they left the shipyard and rode in Ted's Volkswagen to Highway 90, traveling west towards Biloxi, Mississippi. It was not even dusk yet. There was still some daylight to see. When we first saw this thing through the windshield, we thought it was a shooting star going from right to left. But then it came down into a marshy tree-lined area and hovered there for about 30 seconds. It was spinning and had blinking lights on the top all around its edge, all the way around it in a circle. There were blinking lights arranged on it just like you would tape lights on the side of a cake pan. This thing was like a whitish gray colored sailor hat or a tambourine, and it was less than a half a mile away. It looked as big as any big American airliner I've ever seen. And then it just shot away, almost like it was suddenly gone. He said
that big.
I know. He said that shortly after the sighting, he parted company with his friends. And while en route to Ocean Springs, which is where he lived, as darkness was setting in, he saw the same object a second time at about the same distance away, watching it for another 45 seconds to a minute before it again shot off in the same manner as before. He said that there were some other motorists in the area during the episode. Some of them had slowed down to look at the UFO, but they were the only ones that stopped on the road to look at it.
And what year was this one?
This is also 73.
Oh.
This is actually the night before.
And boy, so, I'll tell you what, if I was this person, you know, that put this in, then reading about the Pascagoula abduction, I'm like, I got lucky. Well, that's how I would feel.
So he woke up the next morning, or a couple of days later, he saw the story in the papers about the abduction. And he reported it to his direct supervisor for the Navy, and then he reported it to the lieutenant commander that was stationed where they were as a verbal report, but it was never recorded as a written report, and it was never mentioned or said anything about it again.
Mm-hmm, because it's like that one thing that I've forgotten all of a sudden, where the Rendlesham, you got to write a memo. If you don't write that memo, it don't show up.
He did say that this Mike Catalano guy talked about it with his wife again and decided it would be important to report the UFO sighting. He did place a call to Kessler Air Force Base again, and the person taking his call took the information, but nothing resulted from his advisement to his knowledge. He never actually talked to Hickson or Calvin. He had no interactions with him whatsoever. At the time that this interview was recorded with Mike, or the article was written, Mike didn't even know that a book was written about it. He didn't know there was a song that was written about it. He had no knowledge of any of that stuff that had kind of further taken place.
And it makes me wonder, Josh, how many others saw something, didn't report it, or just blew it off as Venus, right? Because that was a big common, actually, Hynek thing for a long time, or swamp gas, or any of those things that they had been told up to that point and just wrote it off, or was too scared, or any of those things.
You know, I mean, I'll say, there's a lot of people who think about and make the statement, I can't be the only one who've seen it. Somebody else will report it. Right. We know that from Mike Catalano that other motorists saw the thing, but they didn't actually stop to look. I also wanted to think about real quick the buzzing and, that Charles talked about hearing from the entities. It really makes me wonder, we've talked a lot about how the brain kind of protects, the psyche, right? You don't see certain things, you don't hear certain things, because it's a way for the brain to protect you from whatever, so makes me wonder if they actually were speaking.
Yeah.
But he heard it or remembered it as buzzing because it was kind of part of the mental block that
a buzz sounds like a perfect version of what a mental block would be like.
Yeah, almost like the you think about the Charlie Brown teacher, right?
Yeah.
It's like so somebody's talking, right, but you just can't make out what they're saying. You remember it as a buzz. So
And if you think about it, there are a lot of cases to bring this into the convergence aspect. There are a lot of cases of hauntings or cryptid sightings or things like that where there is this sort of overwhelming buzzing that does take place. Sometimes it's even bodily felt, right? This mm-hmm. physical buzzing. But yeah, it does. It makes you wonder if that buzzing is indeed a mental block that does happen. And why do some people's, is it due to trauma? Is it due to not trauma? Why some people experience it, others don't?
Yeah. One, and to kind of reference back a little bit, to the Betty and Barney Hill case, Barney, when they first did the hypnosis session with Barney, there were parts where he would get so, for lack of a better term, worked up, because of the stress of it all, that they had to end the session. And that's what it reminds me of when they were talking about when they tried to do the hypnosis session with Hickson, that he became so frightened that the session had to be aborted.
Oh yeah, exactly right. Just like we talked about Barney Hill. I mean, eventually that's what took his life, was that stress of it all. Really, at the end of the day, in my opinion, that's what took that man's life. And there was just so much stress. Whereas, as a male back then, and all the pressures he already had as an African American during that time period and all that stuff, he had so much on him. And plus, I guess, his general nature, whereas Betty's like, let's do this. Was an it's amazing how two different people experience the same thing, but the after effects are different because she could mentally handle it, whereas Barney could not handle it. And here you've got, Calvin and Charlie handling it different as well.
Right. And it's really interesting here. People always point to these kind of things and say, well, it's probably a hoax. But the amount of kind of visceral fear that one has to have to, you know, have to abort a hypnosis session. I just don't see how you can fake that.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm sick of the word hoax. Hoax implies that it was premeditated,
yeah,
that there were plans in place. There were all these things. If anything, and I'll give skeptics the edge of doubt, or I'll give them the award here to say, if anything, it could be misconstrued, and you just start talking about it and you start talking in what ifs, and those what ifs become solids, yep, right? That, right, I could buy more than a hoax. There's no way these guys did this as a hoax.
Yeah, I would agree.
It's just, it's too much. I mean, Calvin, like, this kid, man, and he just, he couldn't handle the pressure, man.
Well, I mean, I don't even see how, you know, let's say that Calvin and Charles didn't do it as a hoax, but somebody else did.
Sure, like, they got hoaxed.
Right, they got hoaxed, right? Even if that was the case, it's 1973. Who pulled this off without thousands upon thousands upon thousands of dollars spent to create this level of hoax so that it's set in the mind of the person who experienced it? I mean, it just, I don't know.
You know, and there are further skepticisms. Aviation journalist and UFO skeptic Philip Klass found discrepancies in Hickson's stories, noted that Hickson refused to take a polygraph exam conducted by an experienced examiner, and concluded that the case was a hoax. Oh, yeah, because that makes that happen. Another skeptical investigator, Joe Nickel, wrote that Hickson's behavior was questionable and that Hickson later altered or embellished his claims. And I don't like that. I'm sorry. But as time goes on, you are. That's the way the memory works. You're filling, right, in gaps. It's just the way that it is.
Well, you're processing, right?
You're processing
what's happening.
Exactly.
And you're thinking about this. And really, when you think about it, again, that idea that the brain is trying to protect you, right? Mm-hmm. Your brain is processing it, and it's filling in the gaps, usually in the form of, it was probably a goat. It was probably some swamp gas. It was probably thick fog rolling off of the river, so on and so on. Like, your brain is trying to fill those things in to take you away from the conclusions of, it was aliens and they were abducted.
Yeah, and Nickel speculated even more, and this is where I find it's funny. Debunkers, are allowed to speculate, but those that have the experience cannot speculate. And because the skeptics can speculate, therefore their speculations are considered fact and truth, which makes no sense to me. But anyways, Nickel speculated also that Hickson may have fantasized the alien encounter during a hypnagogic waking dream state, and suggested that Parker's corroboration of the tale was likely due to suggestibility, because he initially told police he had passed out at the beginning of the incident and failed to regain consciousness until it was over, a claim supported by Hickson during his To Tell the Truth appearance. So again, speculation rules all.
Yeah.
Which just frustrates me to no end.
Yeah, we've talked about it before, right? It's like any halfway viable alternative, explanation must be the truth.
Yeah,
but any original explanation must be false.
Yeah, and mostly for most of the time, this has been Hickson that has really pushed a lot of this over the years. He wrote a book called UFO Contact at Pascagoula, which I actually have on Audible, which is really, really interesting. And it wasn't until, like, I don't know, later on, probably in the 90s or whatever, that Parker eventually started showing up and kind of standing behind it. And he even started a company called UFO Investigations to produce television stories about UFOs, because he was such a kid at the time. I think he had so many people telling him that he was, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, like, persuaded by an older person.
Taken advantage of.
Thank you. That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah. Taken advantage of. And it took for him to be a full-fledged adult himself to realize that what had happened had...
What had happened.
But it's all very, very... interesting to me. But yeah, I get frustrated. I know I'm kicking a dead horse, but I get frustrated at these skeptical debunkers
that don't have to have evidence to prove the hoax or to prove the debunking, but the proof lies in the hands of the experiencer.
Yep.
And we as experiencers can give said proof, but it's never enough.
It's never enough until you produce. Well, I mean, I don't think it ever is. Even if you were to produce material from the craft, or you were to walk one of these beings, or I don't know, float one of these beings up to somebody and let them take an interview.
I feel like you would take a Joe Nickel or a Philip J. Class onto a spaceship, and they would be like, "This is some good Hollywood stage work, guys. Excellent."
Right. You know, where's I probably can't feel the Quest Oculus on my face, but it's probably there, you know.
Goodness, man. I just oy vey. Anyways, Josh, thank you for sharing that. Before we wrap things up, I know you had one more interview. Not an interview, but another recording that was a shady recording again. So,
So this was actually, the recording was left on in the room, and this is an exchange between Charlie and Calvin.
Right. And this was the next day. The sheriff had asked Charlie to come back and make a complete statement and bring Calvin with him.
Yeah.
And so this is a reenactment of that.
I can't take much more of that.
I gotta get home, and I gotta get to bed, or get some nerve pills, or see a doctor, or something. I can't stand it. I'm about to go half crazy.
I tell you, when we through, I'll get you something to settle you down, so you can get some damn sleep.
I can't sleep yet, like it is. I'm just damn near crazy.
Well, Calvin, when they brought you out of that thing, God damn it, I'd like to never got the hell straightened out of you.
My damn arms! My arms! I remember they just froze up, and I couldn't move, and I, like I had stepped on a damn rattlesnake.
They didn't do me that way.
I passed out. I expect I never passed out in my whole life.
I've never seen nothing like that before in my life. You can't make... You can't make people believe.
I don't want to keep sitting here. I just want to get to a doctor.
They better wake up and start believing. They better start believing.
You see how that door come right up?
I don't know how it opened up, son. I don't know.
It just laid up. And just like that, those sons of bitches, they came out.
I know. And you can't believe it. You can't make people believe
it. I paralyzed right then. I couldn't move, Charlie.
They won't believe it. They gonna believe it one of these days. Might be too late. I knew all along they was people from other worlds up there. I knew all along. I never thought it would happen to me.
And you know yourself, I don't drink.
I know that, son. When I get to the house, I'm gonna get me another drink. Make me sleep. Look what we sitting around for. I gotta go tell Blanche what we waiting for.
I gotta go to the house. I'm getting sick. I gotta get out of here, Charlie. Hard to believe. Oh God, it's so awful. I know there's a God up there. I didn't feel that.
Ooh boy, man. They didn't know they was being recorded. That's all.
No, yeah.
That's some true panic. And and we leave the rest up to you guys.
Yep.
We leave it up to you guys to figure out and decipher for yourself, as we always do. How does this connect to everything else that we discovered? Other, UFO sightings. We got a Bigfoot sighting, likely some poltergeists and some things like that. You know, these, I said, this reminded me almost of a Darrow. It almost sounded of a Darrow. So there could be some Hollow Earth action happening, especially the one saying that they found it in the Pascagoula River, the ship. So maybe that was coming from some underground channel that went down to where the Shaver mystery takes place, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just the shallow looking, if you will, right? Mm-hmm. The light looking, and came across Bigfoot sightings and the Pascagoula abduction. I mean, it really makes you wonder what else is there. What people around the area, what stories do they have to tell? that would corroborate or go alongside the tales and things that we've, you know, listened
right.
to.
Right. Like you said, that was just a quick look. I mean, we didn't right. even have to go far to find that. Yeah. And so, yeah, listeners, if you're out there, man, and you were around that time period, 73, even in Mississippi or somewhere near, and you've got some stories that happened around that time, let us know. Send us an email at contact@theconvergenceenigma.com. Send us your experiences with that. In fact, send us any experiences that you have. I mean, we're always down for that. But, you know, for this episode specifically, I'm asking for those. But as always, send any stories you got. which reminds me, Josh, before we get out of here, you know, you can always find our past episodes in which includes the Allagash abduction story on theconvergenceenigma.com. There you'll be able to find all of our past episodes that we've done throughout the last 4 years, even back when we were Fearscape Paranormal Podcast.
Yep.
That Allagash one is very interesting, and there are some crazy parallels.
There's some correlations there for sure.
Yeah. It's an intense thing. But you know, thank you, Josh, man.
I was just going to make one other correlation between the Betty and Barney Hill case. You know, Barney talked about how they showed red and blue lights, and we even talked about that, you know, there's a possibility that maybe there was some sort of a hypnosis thing going on with showing that light. You know, then here you've got a blue light. And it's really interesting if you research and look into what blue light does to the brain. It's just very interesting. So
that's why Kmart always had the blue light special, man. They knew everybody was coming.
Yeah.
But I hear blue and red, and immediately I'm like, old school 3D, man. If you'd had 3D glasses on, you'd have seen a 3D projection hologram, and you would have had the answer. You'd have had the answer. Way to go, Hickson. Way to go. Oh, man. But yeah, thank you guys so much, as always, for tuning in to the Convergence Enigma here on the UnX Radio Network, as well as the Fearscape Paranormal, the Fearscape Media Network. We love you guys so much, but we are going to get out of here. Thank you guys for sticking around this whole month for Alien Abduction April. We're going to get back to normal here in May. Just some normal McNormalson.
Just normal strange stuff.
Normal strange stuff. So, you know, if you like normal strange stuff, then stick around. But yeah, we're going to go ahead and get out of here. Thank you guys. This has been Stefan. And just a reminder to keep your eyes on the skies.
And this has been Josh. The truth is now.
And as always, remember to keep searching and keep questioning. Good night, everybody.
Good night.